You are listening to. First Gen Teachers Lens. Hey, welcome back to Fresh Gen Teacher. It's a long time no see. Just a lot of stuff going on. Grad school's almost done. I'm super excited, super pumped about that. I'm trying to get back on the flow of things. I know I've been gone for a minute. But yeah, this episode's great. I've been looking forward to having this guest for a while now. We've been in grad school together for about 2 years now. His name is Phil Lee. He's an English teacher, poet, and just has all sorts of titles to his name. So stay tuned. He's going to talk about his collection of poems, Parts of a Man. See you next time.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
And we're live. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast. Today, I have a special guest. I've known this guy for 2 years now, I think, in the grad program. His name is Philip Lee. I don't know what categories to put you, teacher, poet, mentor. There's so many categories.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm all those things. I'm Phil, teacher, poet. Big brother, little brother, you know.
Yeah. So I know you just released a collection of poems, so that's why I want to talk today in our book series, because I think the reason why I started this series is to kind of expunge resources to other educators that may or may not know about it, right? Mm-hmm. So they can implement it in your classroom. So that's what I garner from glancing at your collection of poems. There's a lot of truth to what he's spitting on his poetry. So I'm gonna kick it off with my first question. How did you get into poetry? And then it's kind of a combination of two. How do you balance being an author, teacher, and student at the same time?
Okay, so getting into poetry, there's two things. So there was a TV show that came on HBO called what's the name of the poetry show? Deaf Poetry Jam, excuse me.
Oh, okay, yeah. Gotcha.
It was through Deaf Jam, ran by Russell Simmons. And so she had two seasons worth of the shows on her DVR. And in 2000, I want to say it was 2005, 2006, I dislocated my knee. Mm. And so I was home, and she, because she's a scholar, she had a desk in her room, and so I would draw in her room, but then I popped on her TV, and then I saw Deaf Poetry, and I just started immersing myself in spoken word poetry, and then YouTube, it was a match made in YouTube, I would research I would look up some of the poets that I saw on Deaf Poetry, and then there's a group of poets called the Strivers Row. They're not a collective anymore, but it's a Carvin's LaSant, Joshua Bennett, Zora Howard, Miles Hodges. There's a group of young poets from New York that I would always follow them. And so it was, poetry did for me what journaling didn't. When I remember when I was in high school, I would try to journal, but it was too painful. Mm-hmm. But when it came down to poetry, I was able to express myself and even talk about real things and, pain or, heartbreak or breakup poem. Right. But I was still able to, feel good about it. It was, I don't use the word depressing a lot, but it was, I won't say journal writing was depressing, but mm-hmm. spoken word gave me an opportunity to express myself in a way that other writing did.
Right. Yeah. So what you're saying is that poetry was more of a cathartic experience, if you will, like in terms right. of like, you know,
absolutely
freedom of expression instead of being forced to kind of.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, and I loved, mm-hmm. I'm a fan of music. I love music. I love rap. And I love spoken word because, you know, spoken word will, you'll have a two voice poem where someone is singing and someone is, you know, one person is singing and another person is doing a poem or reciting a poem. Or I've seen it where like it incorporated step in poetry. And so I felt like, you know, it's more than just your regular, you know, sonnet or your regular ballad, but spoken word poetry allows you to be very creative,
right?
You know, so yeah.
Yeah, and then I guess back to my like second question, like I couldn't imagine myself. I just like think about like being in, you know, because we are in the same grad program, and like, just how do you manage all this time? Because like, you know, with like just like teaching, being a student, and then like, you know, kind of like navigating the space of like publishing yourself.
Honestly, bro, it's been a work in progress. It's learn as you go. Sometimes like over the summer, like a lot of what I did for my poetry and like me building my brand for my poetry, I did over the summer. So I had, you know, I was able to like gain some steam over the summer where I, you know, with grad school and teaching and grading wasn't an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But as of now, I just, you know, I try to find little pockets where I can dedicate different amount of time. If I wake up early, sometimes I wake up and I can't go back to sleep. And so it's either at that time, either I'm working on some stuff for my poetry, or I might be, if I need to prepare a lesson, that might be a time that I prepare a lesson. And the balance, like, I feel like it's a perfect marriage because a lot of, and I know we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I incorporate, as a teacher, I incorporate spoken word and poetry. I believe as a teacher, like, one of the greatest things that helps us be effective as teachers is when kids can see our passion. And so because I have a passion for spoken word, I'm able to talk about it in a way that will draw the kids, or I'll be able to use a poem to introduce a hard-hitting topic or to introduce a book or to pair it with a book. And so sometimes it's separated, but a lot of times there's a lot of intersections that happen.
Right, right. No, I mean, that makes total sense. Like right now, I couldn't imagine releasing a book like right in the midst of right now, but like, you know, definitely summers, like I feel like are ways where you can find, you know, time to kind of develop those passions and kind of, you know, really flourish what you want to do in terms of like, you know, especially with the book.
Yeah. And also like I run a spoken word group called Writer's Block. Hopefully they'll listen to this podcast when I send it to them. But some of the poems that's in the book I wrote during writer's block.
And so
here it is, you know, yes, it's a club after school, but you know, these are real feelings. These are real poems that mean something to me. And then I actually have a poem in the book that I wrote with one of my students.
Oh,
so again, there's a lot of, I'm blessed to be at a school that I have a lot of autonomy. So, you know, again, there's a lot of intersectionality.
Right. And then I'm going to shift the conversation more so into the book. One of my first questions when I was looking and like kind of scoping through the book, what was your main inspiration for the book, or like, you know, were there multiple inspirations for the book?
So there were multiple. I'll say honestly, my grandmother's best friend from the first time, from the first poem I did, she was like, oh, Phil, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. And, you know, I kind of put it on the back burner as, you know, that's what grandma's best friend is supposed to say. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned, you know, I'm like a spoken word coach at my school, Institute for Health Professions. And so every year we take part in a competition through Urban Word NYC. It's a youth poetry slam. And a lot of my students, like the finals, when you compete and you make the finals are held at the Apollo Theater. Mm-hmm. And so since I've been teaching, I'll say about 7 of my students have performed on the Apollo stage.
Wow, that's incredible.
And so seeing them and me allowing to, like them allowing me to push them and push them past their comfort zone and get them to share their poetry to more people than just their family. Like I was saying to myself, it inspired me to say like, you need to do more with what you're with your stuff. Like you push your students, you have to push now yourself. And so that was like my inspiration to wanting to like actually compile something and say, hey, this is something that I created and allow myself to be vulnerable and share my thoughts and my process and my faith and my relationship and my experience as a Black man, mm-hmm. In America with, you know, the world.
Right, right, right. And then, oh, go ahead.
No, like, so the name of the book is called Parts of a Man. Mm-hmm. And I have poems in there that are 10 years old and I have poems in there that's 6 months old. Mm-hmm. And so it spans a long period of time. This is my first collection. So like the opening, it was actually like one of the first poems that I ever wrote called I'm Addicted, talking about my addiction to poetry. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I have poems that I wrote with my students, like I said before, or about my students. I have poems that break down my faith, and I know we'll get into different mm-hmm. parts as well.
Right. Yeah. I'm kind of curious in that, like, what made you, like, I know there was different subsections into 4 parts. And then I think, you know, the title, right, it made me think of, like, did you feel like those 4 parts paint a whole picture of you as a man? So it's kind of like a 2-part question. So yeah. I was just curious, why break up the poems into different subsections, and like, what are the meanings behind those subsections?
Okay, so for those listening, it's called Parts of a Man, and it's broken down to faith, love, purpose, go Black man, go. And so as I begin to, like, I had all my poems in a Google Doc. Mm-hmm. And so when I decided that I was actually going to do this, I was like, okay, then I go into the process of picking poems that I really like, that I feel like are material that I can publish and that people could connect with. And then once I did that, you know, I tried to find common themes. And so the themes that I found was I had poems that I talked about my relationship with God. I've grown up, like, my faith is a big part of who I am. Mm-hmm. And so I had those poems. I'm not sure if you still consider a newlywed. I've been married for 3 years. Me and my wife have been dating we dated 2 years before we got married. So I had poems about my relationship with her. And so that's the love part. Purpose, that's the part of it where my students come in, because like all of those poems either talk directly to my students, or I wrote while working with them, or like every year we did a talent show in a multicultural fair. So it might've been a poem that I did at one of the talent shows that I included in there, or again a poem that I wrote during writer's block. Mm-hmm. And in the last section, Go Black Man Go, it was like when you think about, you know, just hearing that phrase, that's like someone cheering somebody else on. Go mm-hmm. Black Man
right. Go. Yeah.
And unfortunately, we live in a society where Black men are being held back and Black men are being mm-hmm. killed unjustly, mm-hmm. As well as Black women and people of color. And so with that part, I wanted to share poems that celebrated being a Black man mm-hmm. and also talked about my experience as a Black man.
Mm-hmm. So,
yes, I do feel like, mm-hmm. I do feel like they are like, when you think about intersectionality and like mm-hmm. I did an activity with my students asking them to think about the foremost parts, present parts of their identity that they think most about. Mm-hmm. And so I do, as an educator, I do think about the fact that I'm a Black male in the classroom a lot. Mm-hmm. My faith again is a big part of who I am. You know, I love my wife. And so yes, like these things, I'm not going to say it's everything of me, but it's a good representation of me. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, yeah, I mean, I think like, you know, even the cover itself is intentional, right? Like, I was just thinking about that now, where it's like, you know, a puzzle, right? And then I felt like, all right, to me, as I was going through the sections combing through, I was just like, this sounds like kind of like a bit of a like kind of like an autobiographical, but in like a poetic form, right? Where it's just like, all right, this is one section of me, this is another section that kind of fits this overarching puzzle, which is like really creative. And like I just thought about the cover now, and I was like, I definitely see the intentionality behind it. And like one of my favorite I guess like section was it or is Go Black Man Go, because I like how you kind of, you know, own the narrative, right? Because a lot of I want to say people of color don't own their narratives are kind of painted for them, you know, in our current societal lens. So two poems that are that one poem in particular that stuck out to me was that that kind of changed this narrative was Hello Black Man, Nice to Meet You, which I thought was really riveting, because it kind of flips the switch in terms of like, you know, what is this notion to be a Black man, especially in the American context, and, you know, or even globally, right? So if you can talk about that, like, because, you know, it sounds like the way you started off, it sounds like it's more so of like a conversational piece where it's like you, in a sense, reflecting, but also talking to other Black men.
Right. And so, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I wrote the poem and it's kind of sad. I was trying to figure out which incident it was, but it came after, you know, one of the many incidents of, you know, police brutality and a Black man being killed while being innocent during an interaction with the police. And I wrote it as a protest. There's a repetition of that line, Hello Black Man, Nice to Meet You. And I address the different Black men. And I'm trying to show the humanity and speak to the humanity of Black men. Because society will, if we allow society to paint the picture, they'll paint us as people that are irresponsible. They'll paint us as we don't take care of our children. They'll paint us as lazy. They'll paint us as angry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout the poem, I'm addressing the Black men in my life. And I actually had the opportunity to, around the time George Floyd got murdered, I actually was like inspired by that. And I on my social media, I asked different people to send me pictures of, you know, the Black men in their lives. And I was able to create like a video montage. And so Hello Black Men is speaking about myself, but it's also speaking about all the Black men in my life that, and in society that we are not the stereotypes that are trying, that are often portrayed about us.
Right. There's no one set box that fits like, you know, the experience of a Black man. Right. That's what I've garnered from that poem. And I don't know, it was very, I want to say in a way euphoric to hear. And also like kind of like, I think like you said before, like positive in terms of like, you know, like how can we see this in an, or, you know, it is in a sense like a bit of a counter narrative to often what is portrayed in the media, which like I honestly thought about, like, you know, especially with you know, a lot of BLM like in the limelight nowadays, like kind of like they're also kind of in the essence like doing the same thing. So that was just really great to see in terms of like you flipping that narrative, right? And then kind of, you know, speaking to that and like manifesting to that. Yeah. And then, oh, go ahead.
No, yeah, and I tried to be very intentional about that. And then also like to show you how exactly like I merged my two worlds. So I wrote this poem, but then during that school year that I wrote it, mm-hmm. Which was, I believe, 2018. Mm-hmm. My seniors, we were reading The Other Wes Moore. Mm-hmm. That talks. It's a memoir, autobiographical text that tells the story of two Black men named Wes Moore that grew up in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And so I used that. I coupled that with the text. And then at that point, I didn't even tell my students that I wrote it. And so we, you know, made different comparisons to what was said in the poem to like, and had them make connections to, the book.
Yeah. And then, like one other poem that really, I kind of gravitate towards, especially to, now, right? For me, I'm reflecting on this past school year, well, past kind of two school years or half school year, I guess, or third, if you will, right? You know, that kind of interpersonal relationship with students. And you wrote a poem, it's called Title to Every Student That Trust Me with their Tears. And I found that very touching in a way, especially it made me reflect on now. I was just thinking about it. But in terms of the overall essence of the poem, can you elaborate on it in terms of like what kind of kicked that poem off?
So as I mentioned, I have a group, the group Writer's Block, and we were actually preparing for a slam. I forget what year it was. It might have been 2017-2018 school year, and we were preparing for a slam. And Writer's Block, I try my hardest every year to loop my guys in. But a lot of times Writer's Block is 90% girls. Mm-hmm. And so this year it was 100% girls. And so as we were practicing, they were breaking down because they were inviting loved ones and their father, like some of them invited their fathers and they said that they wasn't going to be able to come. Or the poem that they're talking about, that they were practicing dealt with, you know, some kind of family issue or dealt with body image or dealt with some kind of disappointment. Mm-hmm. And that day, that time we were practicing, like we went about an hour over time. And I had about four or five students crying in different parts of the room. And I got up, like I, part of the poem says, your story keeps me up at 2:22 in the morning, mm-hmm. thinking of 222 ways to tell you that your now isn't your forever. And that literally happened. I was up at 2:22 in the morning thinking about like all the things that they were crying about, thinking about their concerns, mm-hmm. their fears, and the fact that they trusted me as an educator, as they trusted me as, you know, their quote unquote writing coach or whatever it was. Like, as an educator, we take on so many different forms. Like, we're sometimes we're the social worker, sometimes we're the guidance counselor, sometimes we're the cheerleader. Sometimes, you know, we go to the basketball games when we have the opportunity to go to, and we go to the extracurriculars that they're involved in because we want to show that we care more than just a grade. And so when I wrote that poem, I wrote it specifically to the members of Writer's Block when we had that, you know, during that time. And so if you read the poem, you could tell that I'm talking to my female students. Like I say, I have a line in there that I talk about like the mascara, and because it was, you know, it was a group of young ladies that trust me with their stories. And like I said, the majority of the time, like even last year, if I had 10 faithful members of Writer's Block, 9 were young ladies. And so, you know, I'm hearing them talk about how they get hit on by men on the street. Mm-hmm. I hear them talking about how, you know, the boyfriend is, you know, doing inappropriate things. And I'll keep it at that just to keep things, you know, to keep privacy. Mm-hmm. And so it's an honor for me to be entrusted with those stories. And so I was writing that back. And so actually what I did was, like I said, we were practicing for the slam. And so the next day before we went to the slam, I performed the poem for them before we left to go to the school. And, you know, they really appreciated it. And then even when my students, when they heard that I was writing the book, a few of them asked me if I included the poem, and I told them absolutely, you know. And so that's really where the inspiration came from. And then, of course, as I was writing, I like certain parts of it, you know, came from like, you know, different interactions from the classroom. But like Writer's Block was the inspiration for that poem.
Right. No, it seemed like I don't know. I built the connection towards like the classroom more so because like, you know, I think about, especially now, me being essentially virtual, like those moments where you kind of have those deep, immense emotional connections. And like, it feels, honestly, it feels like it's been subdued by like this whole platform where
it's been a big disconnect. It's been a lot harder to make those connections. Like I myself, like I didn't run Writer's Block during the fall semester just because I was spending too much time between grad school and being a teacher. Like I was too burned out to be on a computer for more than I had to. And then, yeah, it's very hard to build those connections because a lot of times, you know, the students do have their cameras off. But I will say I have been more recently, I've seen that I am still creating rapport and building those relationships. It just happens in different ways. And so if it's a private comment to one of my students, or like I've been intentional about making phone calls home when I see a student is really, really engaging in class, and whether their camera is on or off, but they're engaging. And then like, I recently had a conversation with one of my students in a breakout room, and she was like, Mr. Lee, how do you stay happy all the time? Aren't you frustrated? And I was like, yes, I'm frustrated. And in the fall, I was very frustrated. But mm-hmm. when it came to the spring, I decided rather than focus on the students that are not in the classroom, I do focus on the ones that are there and make the most out of it.
Right.
And so, you know, we got to kind of make lemons out of lemonade, like make lemonade out of lemons.
Right.
Sounds cliche, but.
It's true. Know. It's honestly true. Growth mindset, I think about right. it all the time. Like, absolutely. If I, like, that poem, it to me, it made me feel bittersweet, man, I'll be honest, because, like I've been, like, I know only of a few other teachers on social media that have been, like, fully immersed only online. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, hybrid, you know, you kind of do, like, get to see them in person, I guess. But it's a weird space to be in. But, like, when I was reading that, I was like, man, like, how many tears did I miss this year?
Right.
It made me think about, like, man, like, how many students are really struggling with those, you know, personal kind of problems that, like, the poem talked about.
And as educators, we are passionate about English, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we teach more than how to write an essay and how to how to annotate and how to you know, do a works cited page. And so, like, that connection, absolutely, I'm with you, bro. Like, and I've been going into the building, so I'm not completely remote, but when I was completely remote, I hated it, because it was mm-hmm. like other than the fact that I was home with my wife, because my wife is also a teacher, and so, you know, other than the convenience of that, like, as far as the building a connection, it was so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's so many students that then on a regular basis they're not going to ask for help. And so you don't have the benefit of going over and nudging them, you know, and going to help them even without asking them, because, you know, you put them in a breakout room and they don't say anything.
They don't talk. It's like talking to nobody where it's just like, hey, is anybody there? Like, sometimes it feels like I have a Ouija board, just like summoning spirits. But the last thing I want to get before we kind of depart is, where can people find AU, like social media, or your book?
Okay, so on Instagram, the name of my page is Sam Lee, FAMLEE _ man. That's where I put a lot of my content out. I'm on YouTube, Family, FAMLEE man poetry. Facebook, it's under my government name, Philip Lee.
Okay.
The name of my website is www.familymanpoetry.com. You can purchase the book there. On my Instagram account, I have a link tree, so you'll be able to, there's links directly to my book. There's links to the different content that I've created. At the end of April, I hosted my first online open mic.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrate National Poetry Month, and so I'm actually planning another one for June to celebrate Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be all about, like, Black power and Black freedom and Black love, and so those are the places that they can find me. I'm very accessible. You know, you shoot me a DM if you would like to talk to me, ask me a question. Every week I try to send out a little message, my Dear Dreamer messages,
mm-hmm.
There's little notes and affirmations that I've learned and lessons that I'm learning for myself as I'm in this journey of learning how to balance all of this, being a professional and being a dreamer at the same time. So yeah.
And for anybody listening or listeners there, like, I'll always post, like, all the links to all the materials. And I just want to thank you, Phil, for being a great guest. And, you know, hopefully we get a lot of people getting that book. And is there, just before we go, I want to ask, like, one kind of, is there a possibility of another book in the near future?
So I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I have poems that did not make this book, but that I still love. Mm-hmm. You know, I could easily make a Parts of a Man part two. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'll do that, but I think one of the next things I'm going to do in connection with this is my next steps are working to get this digitally, as well as doing an audio book. And because I actually received some feedback today, someone was like, I love the poetry, but I want to hear it. I would love to see how you would recite it. And so before we get to the next one, I would like to, you know, grow this and find all the markets and find all my audiences and really have a conversation about the different parts of a man, because these are my four parts, but you may have four parts that are most present for you. Mm-hmm. Right? And we can use the book as a spark for conversation.
Right. Well, again, Phil, thanks for being a great guest. And this is First Gen Teacher Lens.
Thank you for having listened to the First Gen Teacher's Lens. We'll see you here next time.